The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Oh, happy Tuesday. We've got Arabi Lekamain, Karen Cho, myself, Steve Sedgwick, and the easier headlines this Tuesday morning. US Treasury yields, wait for it, they're touching four-month highs. Traders looking to the absolutely pivotal inflation print tomorrow, Wednesday, whilst the JP Morgan CEO, Jamie Dimon, warns inflation may prove more stubborn than expected. A subsidy war heats up as the White House awards chip giant TSMC over $6 billion in grants, with Samsung reportedly set to get a similar deal.
AI is a game changer. The demand for chips, not just from TSMC, from Intel, from Samsung, is going to go through the roof. And now more than ever, we need this produced in the United States.
Ether prices post their biggest jump in more than a month over speculation the cryptocurrency could see ETF applications approved soon. We'll talk through the crypto landscape with the CEO of Binance later today at 11:30 CET. Atos shares see a near 20% rise as the French IT firm tries to strike a restructuring deal, reportedly seeking more than 1 billion euros in new front funding.
And going for gold, prices of the precious metal hitting another all-time high, this being the 15th record close this year.
Good morning, how are
you? Very well.
I haven't seen you for over a week.
Yeah, great to see
you. You on your travels, I was on my travels. Yeah. I tell you what, you know this Como trip of mine, which I love more than any other trip in the world. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic, and not just because the weather was kind for once, because I get to sit there. And but did you see the Richard Koo tape from the Muir Research Institute?
Right, yes.
Honestly, our chat lasted best part of 30 minutes, but we obviously only could put certain amounts on there. But the stuff you learn when you speak to these absolutely smart historical commentators, and just put so much of the
biggest takeaway message that you had.
Oh, do you know, the message is, Scorebox is a brilliant show, but yeah. Sometimes we need a long play segment within it as well, just to listen to these really smart people just talking about history repeating itself. You know, what happened to Japan with its balance sheet recession, potentially the same story in China. Trump and his protectionist rhetoric, actually, he totally gets why free trade doesn't work when you get to such excessive levels. The size of the US balance sheet with the size of the excess banking reserve, stuff like this needs longer conversations. And I love our show, but sometimes it's just lovely to hear these people. And you're going to get loads of that in the US in the coming week or so.
Of course, IMF next week. But I think what we're looking at now for markets is a real lack of direction. We're waiting for fresh clues. We've traded ourselves almost to a standstill again. You know, so much information. We've rallied hard, but we haven't had the right information that the markets are looking for to justify that rally.
I think you are 100%. Yeah, of course you're right. I mean, it's just, but they're just, I think you're right, but I would add on to that tenterhooks. I think they are so nervous about not even strong data, but just pretty solid data rather than particularly strong. You know, look at the payroll. I mean, that was just phenomenal. Anyway, look, I mean, what's fascinating from what you're about to say is that the Treasury market, load of action there, load of action in the Forex market, but actually the equity market net-net, fairly, kind of, as you say, just waiting for the next bit of information.
Yeah, keep in mind, we are now starting to escalate back to those levels pre-rally that started late last year. So the markets had some challenging numbers to weather on the Treasury market around November. And you can see we're inching back towards that territory if you take stock of the long end, the short end. 4.41 is where we're perched at the long end on the 10-year. That is very much close to those November highs. And we're at 4.78 at the short end. So the market's now starting to price in the expectation that, look, it may not be three rate cuts this year. It could be two, it could be one, could even be none. All this on the back of hawkish commentary now from Fed members. CPI numbers tomorrow all important. So you're seeing some of that lackluster activity just move its way into the US markets as the equity picture looks somewhat tamer this week. We kicked off the session yesterday, barely straying from the flatline, as you can see across on the major boards for the Dow, the S&P and the NASDAQ. A slightly different finish for all of them, but as you can see, not much direction taking place. I want to take you to the dollar because it has been that strength in yield that has been the underpinning story for the greenback trade, and sterling dollar tried to claw back some territory this morning. Euro dollar on watch as well. Don't forget, we've got the ECB this week. Is it on course for a rate cut? And is that time frame June? We're 108.55 on euro dollar. As you can see, just slipping slightly morning session. Dollar yen rates, we're just off the 152 handle, but lots of talk about whether we're close to intervention territory that is closely watched on markets. Some pushback by the Bank of Japan Governor Ueda saying that the central bank must consider reducing the degree of monetary stimulus if trend inflation continues to accelerate. Unfortunately, that trend inflation is not yet at their 2% target. So that is something we're watching very closely for the Japanese market. The decline in the yen, you can see, not impacting the Tokyo stock market negatively. In fact, we've escalated back. As you can see, next target will be 40,000 at this stage, up another 0.8%. Hong Kong stocks firmer, Shanghai is down a little bit. Again, persistent concerns around the strength of that Chinese market. The ASX in Australia up 0.5%.
I mean, Karen, you mentioned those Ueda comments. Absolutely, the man's got a difficult job, but he's, look at this. Look at the dollar yen where it's trading. 152. Now, Ueda's saying, well, I won't comment specifically on levels. Well, maybe you need to start talking about it because give the market a bit of confidence. You guys are going to actually intervene at some stage because various factors are behind FX moves, this is interesting, should move stably, reflecting fundamentals. Can we show a 5-year on the dollar yen or something a bit longer? They are totally, totally, totally reflecting the fundamentals. You've got the US, which has got over historic 500 basis points plus of hikes, 525 to 550. And then you've got the Japanese, who had the most dovish hike of all time, but are still pretty much at zero, with owning the entire bond market, owning 2/3 of the US equity ETF market. I think these are moderate moves compared with the differentials and interest rates, the carry trade, which is there in extremis.
Let me just pick up on this quote, the various factors are behind FX moves. So would you get involved in the markets at this point when you know CPI is coming up tomorrow? So as they're pointing out, there are other factors. It's not just the Japanese story. In some ways, it's really a greenback strength story. So if you use your firepower now, will it have any bang for the buck, given that there are external factors taking place here?
Yeah, spot on. Look, Minneapolis Fed President Neel Kashkari says the Federal Reserve has to get inflation back to its 2% target. That's interesting. That's interesting. Get it back to a 2% target rather than the path to. This tautology matters. Now, he's warned that the credibility of the FOMC is at stake.
We'd built up a lot of credibility going into the shock. So people had confidence. Yeah, we're seeing this high inflation, but we believe the Fed is serious about getting it back down. That helped us get it back down as far as but we got to go all the way. Because if we stop short, then you all are going to say, well, maybe they're going to stop short next time.
Yeah, he's right, isn't he? Traders are continuing to cut their bets on how many times the Fed will cut this year, as well as the timing of those cuts. Futures contracts for December, we're looking at December now point to 60 basis points worth of cuts this year. That is, wow, they're paring back, aren't they? Down from, remember the halcyon days for many of you? Thought you were going to get 150 basis points slated at the start of the year? Didn't happen, did it? Traders are also split over when the easing will start, with the odds of the FOMC holding its rates in June meeting currently 50%. Wow. That's aggressive, down from the levels you were looking at previously. The outlook for the US consumer inflation is stabilizing, though, according to the New York Fed March survey of consumer expectations. But concerns over debt payments are starting to rise. Good job this show's mentioned that one or twice, isn't it? Americans see inflation at 3% in a year from now, with the 3-year outlook at 2.9%. We'll call that 3, shall we? With the 5-year standing at 2.6. Almost 13% of those surveys expressed concerns over missing debt payments, the highest in 4 years.
Interesting comments from the JP Morgan boss, Jamie Dimon, who's warning inflation may prove to be stickier than forecast, adding that rates may stay higher than markets are expecting. Dimon cited the growing need for increased spending in several key sectors, alongside large amounts of government deficit spending. JP Morgan CEO said the bank has scenario plans for rates as high as 8% and as low as 2%. So 6% range, fairly wide.
Yeah, get a couple of double decker buses through that, couldn't you? Alex Morris, President and CIO of FM Investments, join us now. Alex, we always love speaking to you. Thanks for joining us from Chicago. God awful time there this morning or this evening, depending which way you look at it. Alex, I think we're on tenterhooks for every single piece of data. This CPI is going to be massive, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, Steve, you and I have disagreed on other things, but we're on the same side in this one. The market is looking for something and it's ready to be disappointed. And I think it's ready to react pretty harshly if it is disappointed.
Alex, the economy is in great fettle at the moment as well. I had a long hour and a half conversation with Jan Hatzius from Goldman's the other day, and he was really, really comfortable with everything about the US economy, pretty much. I mean, there are a few things at the side which were concerning. But how much is that already over-reflected in a too strong fashion by the equity market? Or actually, is the equity market underestimating the gains that can be made from here?
I think the equity market has, as we said, you were saying earlier, sort of traded itself to a standstill as it's looking for some next signal, but it doesn't seem to have any reason to retreat from where it is. I mean, it seems to be the king of all optimism, and it tends to find a way to keep doing that. And there's a pretty strong supply and demand argument for constant fresh supply from retirement and other funds that have to go into some risk asset. For as much as we'd love all of them to come into the treasury market, it just isn't the case. So they will continue to push that level up as long as there isn't strong macroeconomic data forcing those assets, that risk budget somewhere else.
Alex, can I just pick up on some of the trades we've seen even the last 24 hours? Almost as though the market is reversing some of the trades of last week. I mean, energy, one of the sectors down the most. It was one of the stronger sectors last week. Banking names bounced back. They were weaker last week. What are traders doing when it comes to positioning around some of these sectors?
Well, I think most of them are running around trying to figure out what is the next momentum trade going to be. Oil seemed like a pretty safe bet, and long term, I suspect that works. The last time we were talking, we said, well, might as well put some gold in the portfolio because why not? If we get it wrong, this one might be a nice hedge against all of that. And that seemed to work out pretty well. And I think most traders now are in the same sort of stuck position. Where are we going to head to? It's like that old story of the French general who sees the crowd going and says, I need to know where they're going so I know where I could lead them. And I think many traders are stuck in that exact position right now.
So gold hovering just below a record high that was hit yesterday. As you mentioned, that's some of the bullion trades that you've had on. Is there a point at which you would be willing to sell?
Certainly. I don't think this is it. It's been a good hedge. I'm not one who's willing to put my hedge into Bitcoin at the moment. So I like where it's positioned. And I like the fact that it's a nice refuge for traders when we don't know exactly what else to do. And I think there's a lot of that uncertainty that's yet to come into the market. So I'm happy with that position. Also like where copper is, that's been a popular trade. That's one I like to play through a name like Freeport Moran, where it's easier to get access through the equity market to that direct than buying the metal directly. And that's proven to be a nice trade as well. And I think that plays into some of the fears that will be discussed over today and tomorrow's CPI is what happens in the bear case where inflation comes back and why is it coming back? And my argument would be, the bear case for inflation is commodities-driven inflation. So not so bad to be in commodities and benefit from it while you can.
Alex, what about the leadership? I don't mean of the United States. That's another question. We'll do that one later in the year. Leadership of this market. You absolutely spot on. You were talking about Mag 7 down to Fab 4 as well. How much are we still challenged by the valuations of those amazing big tech companies? Should we carry on looking for other leadership?
Well, I think we're deeply challenged by it. And, I've been trying to rotate folks into a more balanced, S&P, what was 493, now maybe 496. And I think that trade has worked out. But it's still hard to look at some of the gains of an NVIDIA and a handful of the super big tech companies and say, I should miss out on that upside while it's there. And the counter argument, the argument for going into it versus looking for other leadership is, they're just so liquid that even if you get it wrong and have a really bad session and lose 4 or 5 points, you can exit that position and very quickly reallocate to other sectors, whether that be something more consumer driven and more broad based or something more thematic based on what's happening in the market at that moment. And I think that's a great hedge for all investors. And when you're uncertain, is make sure you stay liquid. The more liquid you are, the easier it is to move. I get a little nervous and call some of a sentiment top when I start hearing folks asking me if they should get into some two-year lockup 10% coupon trade that some bank is offering them. And my thought is that that's a good moment to say, maybe take a step back and just up your liquidity, not decrease it, because someone has a guess on something that's going to happen, and it probably isn't in your favor.
Wise words, Alex. Thank you so much for joining us again. Alex Morris with us, President and CIO, FM Investments. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned that the U.S. is prepared to sanction Chinese banks if they aid Russia's military in its war against Ukraine, including through financing the trade of military or dual-use goods. Speaking exclusively to CNBC as she wrapped up a four-day trip to China, Yellen also urged the country to change its industrial policy to reduce the level of state support for the green energy sector.
They certainly listened, and I think they understood that this is something that's very important to the U.S., but as I emphasized, and I think they've also heard, we're not the only country that's concerned about a flood of Chinese exports wiping out important firms and industries in our country.
Yellen also refused to rule out tariffs on Chinese green energy exports.
We need to keep everything on the table. Want to work with the Chinese to see if we can find a solution. We are engaging in a four-year review of Section 301 tariffs. That's not complete, so I can't really speak to what will come of it. I wouldn't rule anything out, but I think we need to deal with this issue.
Terrific email in Karen and mine's inbox from the most excellent Richard Windsor from Radio Free Mobile. And I'll just say the headline from it. It says China versus US insurance policy. I don't even need to go into the copy, because you must know, if you know anything about the chip fabrication market, of what he's talking about, because TSMC has secured a $6.6 billion worth of grants from the US government. Sounds extraordinary, as well as around $5 billion in loans under the Flagship Chips Act. The move is part of an agreement that will see the Taiwanese firm expand its planned investment in an advanced Arizona facility by $25 billion. The investment is set to boost the US government's plans to bring 20% of global advanced chip manufacturing to the country by 2030. US Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo said the investment is significant for the country's semiconductor ambitions.
AI runs on 2-nanometer. Right now, the U.S. makes 0% of these leading-edge chips in America, and TSMC is saying that they're going to start making this in America at scale. So it's good for our economy, but quite frankly, it's good for our national security, because you can't be a great nation if you buy all of your leading-edge chips from one company in another country, in this case, Taiwan.
Yeah, it's not just another country, though. That's the point, isn't it? Samsung is reportedly set to receive more than $6 billion in subsidies from the U.S. government to expand its chip production plant in Texas. That's according to a report from Reuters, which said the chip maker will more than double its U.S. investment to over $44 billion as part of the agreement.
Now, coming up on the show, with 2 months left until the European elections, the leader of far-right group Identity and Democracy tell CNBC the goal is to become a strong opposition. We'll bring you more from this interview next. Plus, JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon joining the chorus of AI bulls, telling shareholders the technology could be as disruptive as the printing press, electricity, as well as computers. And speaking of disruptive technology, out of the pan and into the air fryer, the appliance has revolutionized the way we cook. But will they stick around for much longer? Don't miss our conversation with the CEO of SharkNinja. That's coming up at 9:30 CET.
Listen to CNBC's Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the biggest tech news from across the globe. Join me, Arjun Karpal.
And me, Tom Chitty, every week as we bring you insights into the top stories, unpack the latest trends, and find out where the industry is headed.
Now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
All
Welcome back. Hamas officials say they're studying an Israeli ceasefire proposal made through mediators in Cairo, but said the plan did not meet the demands of Palestinians, describing the Israeli position as intransigent. The comments come as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu repeats that securing victory over Hamas requires an offensive in Rafah, where over 1 million Palestinians have been displaced due to the conflict in the Gaza Strip. Netanyahu said the country remains committed to achieving its goals.
Today, I received a detailed report on the talks in Cairo. We are working all the time to achieve our goals, primarily the release of all our hostages and achieving a complete victory over Hamas. This victory requires entry into Rafah and the elimination of the terrorist battalions there. It will happen. There is a date.
Elections for the European Parliament are only 2 months away, and parties are already ramping up their campaigns ahead of the vote. Anders Vistisen, a member of the European Parliament's far-right group Identity and Democracy, has told CNBC the goal for this election is to become a viable opposition as the party continues to gain momentum across Europe. Well, Sylvia joins us with more. Not often you hear about becoming a viable opposition. Usually the main target is to win, but there has certainly been a lot of inroads in for the far-right in Europe.
Totally. And we are essentially looking at some of the trends as we approach the vote in early June. Well, recently, we looked at why the Green Party is expected to lose some seats at the European Parliament. Today, we are looking at the rise of far right. And just to give you an idea, and perhaps we can show you the polls at this stage, looking at the Identity and Democracy group, they're expected to win 82 seats at this European parliamentary election. That's up by 9 from the previous election. And the other group in the European Parliament that also has far-right politicians, the ECR, is expected to get 81 seats. That's up by 19 at this stage. So it's clear, looking at the polls, that there is this trend of seeing more far-right politicians at the European Parliament post the upcoming vote in early June. The key question here is why? Why are people considering voting for far-right parties at this stage? Now, I spoke to a member of a think tank last week, and he explained to me, by having done some polls across the European Union, that there's several reasons. They're noticing, particularly in countries such as Italy, Austria, Sweden, Germany, and Portugal, an increase in appetite for far-right parties. And there's several reasons behind that. One of them is the fact that these parties have done a lot of work to detoxify some of their narrative and indeed try to address some more voters really across the bloc. And the other side of the equation here is that people are feeling a sense of disappointment with the European Union, the way that they have announced the Green Deal and so on. So they are trying to cater for that part of the population. Now, when I had the chance to speak to Anders Vistisen, he explained to me what are their plans, what they're going to do if indeed the polls prove correct and they get more seats at the European Parliament.
Our plan is, of course, to gain momentum and to put pressure on the EPP to stop collaborating on several issues like migration, Green Deal, other topics with the left and the extreme left, and carry out center-right policies instead of leftist policies in Europe. So we will see whether we are going to be successful in that endeavor, but no matter what, we will be a strengthened opposition towards the more federalist groups in the European Parliament.
So just to understand, post European Union elections, and based on what you just said, the idea of your party is to block further policies that, for instance, would support the Green Deal.
Yeah, in the ID group, we've said that the Green Deal is a job killer, it's a growth killer. It's something that is have moved a lot of industry jobs from the Europe to the US and have made it possible for China to circumvent custom regulations when it comes to steel and other important raw materials. So the Green Deal, the way Europe is going about the green transition, is hopeless. We are now losing competition left and right, and at the same time we are seeing recession and a very poor functioning economy inside the EU, and that's the worst of both worlds.
Now, one of the open questions at this stage, and as I mentioned earlier, there are two groups at the European Parliament that have far-right politicians. The question is whether they can actually work together, because that would naturally make them even stronger when approving or not approving legislation at the European Parliament. And so I pose that question to Anders Wittesen as well, whether he's keen or actually willing to work with other far-right politicians at the European Parliament.
Whether the ECR wants to join forces or not is not, I think, as important as the daily working together, but they're more than welcome to come, and we have had that discussion with them previously. But I think for now, for the ID group, we are going to grow, we are going to grow significantly, and whether the ECR wants to join in that success or not is their decision. We are more than open to talk with them about a way to have a larger group, but as long as we are not allowed to take part of the legislation work in the same way as other groups.
So we're approaching that key vote. Let's see what will be the final result. But no doubt at this stage, looking at the polls, more traction at this stage for far-right politicians.
Yeah, that's extraordinary, isn't it? And as we saw in Spain, the old adage is, it's the economy, stupid, from the Clinton administration in the early 90s. But as we saw in Spain, you know, with the problems that Sanchez had putting together a government, it ain't the economy, stupid. As we're seeing with Biden at the moment, if it was just about the economy on pure fundamentals, Biden, the US economy is growing at a 2% clip plus. The rest of the world struggling. Yeah. It ain't just about the economy, stupid, anymore.
I actually posed that question because looking at the economic fundamentals, the situation is not that bad.
However, well, it's worse in Europe than it is in the States.
Correct. Yeah. However, we've had a lot worse in Europe. However, according to the think tank I spoke with, the ECFR, they said that people do not feel the benefits and they are more concerned with still high inflationary pressures. They're still feeling that. And then they are, at the same time, they are concerned about their future. The enlargement policy of the EU, the Green Deal, all of that is still very much a topic of concern for parts of the population.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market moving news, you can head to CNBC.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.